Welcome to the Washington Defender Grassroots. I'm Pastor Brian Noble, CEO of Family Policy Institute of Washington, and I am here with Matthew, the host of The Great Reassessment. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Pastor Brian. It's an honor to be with you today.
So tell us about The Great Reassessment and a little bit about what your podcast is about.
Yeah, so, well, my podcast is fairly eclectic. I talk about things like history, medicine, freedom, economics. I talk a lot about Bitcoin. That's a passion of mine. So I have a lot of guests who are really knowledgeable in the Bitcoin space. And then I've also recently just gone down a couple of conspiracy rabbit holes just for fun.
Yeah.
I had a guy on recently who was an expert researcher on the moon landing. And, you know, wherever you fall on that, it doesn't really matter, but it's just fun to talk about. And so, yeah, it's a very eclectic podcast, but it's I would say it's uniquely me. I'm a fairly eclectic person. I've had my hands in a lot of different fields over the years, and it's really just to educate. It's to have good conversation, and I would say to inspire people to become self-didacts.
Yeah.
To never stop learning. And I'm a former teacher, and so education is a huge passion of mine.
Yeah. Well, I know that on top of all of our mind, the idea of always being a learner, Charlie Kirk was definitely a learner. I got to know him personally, mildly on stage a couple of years ago and meet his wife. And I also know that family was incredibly important to Charlie and to you as well. So first we would pay our respects to Erica and the family, and we want to say that our prayers are with you. And I don't have any of the updates on that situation as of yet, except it looks like they brought someone into custody and that they're interviewing him and interrogating him, I guess you might say, to see if he is the person. But so anyways, I just wanted to give our respect to that as well. So let's talk about family and the family unit. Why is that?
Say one thing about
Charlie. Yeah.
Just, you know, I just want to say, may the Lord rest his soul. Mm-hmm. And we're still learning a lot about what was the cause of all this and who's behind all of it. But I think that whoever the perpetrators are or is, they think that by taking out one guy that maybe they've settled something, but they don't see that this is a fight of darkness versus the light, right? Hmm. We are the light.
Right.
And when you take one out, there's going to be 100,000 more.
That's right. And
so, you know, I think about Charlie often these last couple of days, and just, I really was following him for a long time, like since before Trump's first campaign in 2015, 2016 time.
Right.
And so Charlie had an amazing impact on me. And I just want to say that we're all going to miss him, and we pray for his family.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there's a lot of things happening in the Spokane area and also on the Seattle side to honor him and to show that respect. And I firmly agree with you. Like the thing about those who are in the light, like you're describing, is that when death comes in, it's like it sprouts up something brand new, right? So like whenever you put one seed of corn in, it makes a million more corns, right? You know, corn seeds and or kernels of corn, I guess is the best way to say that. But and that's what's going to happen here, is because people are going to become more bold about their views and their positions. And I would tell you, having spent a little time with him, that would be what Charlie wants. He wants people to be courageous. He wants us to speak the truth, and he wants us to stand for righteousness in the public square. And so, we pay our respects to Erica and the family, and we know he's in heaven. He's proclaimed Jesus Christ as Lord. And we know that, that it's off, you know, it's a horrible time for those kids. You know, it crushed me to know that they were at the event, you know, his kids were there, and that just crushes my heart. We do give that respect. Let's just do a quick prayer for the family, and then we'll dive into our show. Heavenly Father, we just lift up Erica to you right now, and the kids, and the mom and dad, and all the people who have been touched by Charlie. We know that you love us, you care for us, and we know that you go before us in all things. Would you comfort us in this time, and just be with us, and let Erica know that she is deeply loved. And I know that the pain and the sorrow will come again and again. And the grief will come again and again, but you are with her in that. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
So let's talk about marriage. Let's talk about your show, whatever you want to talk about. This is grassroots, so it's just an open mic for you to mobilize people and to encourage people in the state of Washington.
Yeah, well, so for anybody who doesn't know me, my name is Matthew Mastronardi. I live in the Spokane area, and I'm a Christian. And, you know, just over the last couple of years, I've been really motivated to make an impact on my community, to do what I'm good at, and to do it for the Lord. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is event organizing. You know, I've always had a knack for being able to host events and being able to get people there. And I'm just looking around our communities, our society, and our country today. And one of the things that's a big problem, a big thing we can see on the horizon, is that Christians are not getting married. There's less and less families getting started today. And, you know, the average age of when people get married is getting later and later. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's somewhere upper 20s, 30s. You might have the stats on that off the top of your head, but, you know, it's,
I think it's 27 is the average marriage rate, up to 35, which, you know, I started my family at 23. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, now I'm a grandpa with three kids at 51. Three grandkids. And I can tell you that there's just a difference of energy, a difference of a lot of things that play into that. And I would encourage families like you are to get married, have kids, and we can go into the birth rate in just a few moments, but yeah. It's amazing. Like we are not repopulating and it, as God has called us to do.
Exactly. And so what my intention is to host pretty much singles mixers for Christians.
Yeah.
And so we've done one already, but here in the Spokane area, I hosted a Christian singles mixer. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool, actually. And, you know, one of the greatest places that you could meet a potential godly spouse is at church.
Right.
But if you've already met everybody in your church and right. there's just nobody there for you, you know, you have work, you have maybe your family, mm-hmm. you have, you know, church stuff, it can be really hard, especially just the technological age that we live in, where everybody's behind screens, everybody's cooped up in their house.
Right.
It can be an incredibly difficult task to meet a potential godly spouse. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's, you know, wrong. I think it's actually a good thing that we need to actually be creative in how we help people meet each other. And so circumventing a lot of the natural issues that we have today with the fact that there's no third spaces, there's no places of meeting where people just sort of naturally meet their neighbors and get to know people. Right. So providing a space, a sacred space where godly, mature Christians who know what they want, they know what they're looking for in a spouse, can meet each other. And that's a noble thing. And one of the fruits of that is more godly marriages, more families, more children being brought up in the admonition of the Lord. And that's a beautiful thing for a community. And it Christianizes our community. It Christianizes our state. Mm-hmm. And maybe, who knows, our country.
You know, exactly what you're saying is incredibly important, because I think oftentimes there's a couple social issues that we're dealing with. And what I mean by that is because of our screen time, because of our interaction through a lot of social media, there's this polarization and politicalization of relationships, right? So everything seems to be a tension point now. Everyone's easily offended. Everyone's, you know, has this ability to walk in offense. And so then we isolate more, and it just keeps breeding that isolation down. And what I love what you're doing is you're saying, okay, let's set a godly environment where people can meet, where they can get to know each other. I know for Tanya, my wife, we've been married about 30 years or 28, I guess it is. We met on a blind date. Someone set us up, and it was just that they made the connection. It was my cousin, actually. But you know, I think it's incredibly important about what you're doing. So you've had one of these events. Tell us about that event. Like, what was it like?
Yeah, so we had a registration process. It was pretty informal. You know, it was just if you wanted to register, you just filled out this Google form. You know, there has to be a survey, right? We have to vet people a little bit just to make it safe.
Right.
And we want to make sure that these are people who are serious, that they attend a church, and that they're actually in good standing with their church too. Mm-hmm. That these are not just random nominal Christians who have been bouncing around from church to church for the last 5 years. So right. Some of the questions I ask are like, you know, what's your age? Have you been married before? But like, where do you go to church? Does your pastor actually know you personally?
Wow.
I think that's a really important question. If you're going to a church and your pastor does not actually know you personally, there's somewhat of that's a yellow flag. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that the people who are coming to these things are well poised. They're ready to enter into a Christian marriage. And one of the signs one of the good signs that we could look and be encouraged by is like, this is a man or a woman who's actively involved in their church. Their pastor knows them. He or she knows the pastor by name. And, you know, if we ever needed to reach out or something like that, like we could get a pastoral endorsement and just mm-hmm. be encouraged that this is somebody who's not a creeper, you know,
and right,
who's sneaking into this event for personal gain or whatever. And so with these new events coming up, we're polishing up the process up a little bit, but basically the same thing. We want to protect women. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that the men coming to this are godly, righteous men and with the women too. Mm-hmm. But we have a responsibility to protect the women who are coming. And so we have a questionnaire and it costs money, right? These things are not free, but you know, what I tell people is like, you could go on a first date with somebody and easily drop $100.
Right.
It amounts to nothing. And it's just a waste of money at the end of the day. Or you can pay a little less money, come to an event where there's a handful of prospects, like high caliber men and women mm-hmm. who you already know fear the Lord.
Right.
And so, you know, that's going on a blind date is, you know, I'm glad it worked out for you, but there's a little bit of a risk going with that too, because it's like, if you end up going on a date with somebody and they're not even a Christian, it's like, man, did we just waste this entire night?
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing. So I'll give you a little precursor to that. My cousin's Catholic. And he said, hey, I have this girl that I know and she's like a wacko Christian like you. And so he had done the vetting. He'd done what you said. She is so plugged into her church and her small group, like you're plugged into your church and your small group, we should meet. So we actually, our first date was at church, right? So our blind date was at her college ministry. And then, you know, and it was just a God thing, right? I mean, at that moment, and it, you know, it took a lot of courage to show up to someone else's church and show up, you know, to do that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I hear you. So someone did do the vetting for us. I'll just tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and kind of awesome. And kind of set us up, and but it's incredibly important. So when they get there, do they like? I mean, what is it awkward? Is it like the junior high date where people are standing against the wall and I mean dance and or what so is it like?
There's you have to remember people who are coming to this have a noble desire to start a family and get married and start a family, mm-hmm. and you know I send out a few emails ahead of time like. Let's just embrace the awkwardness. Okay. Right. It's going to be a little awkward. Like you're meeting strangers. Anytime you meet strangers, it can always be a little awkward.
Right.
But as my, you know, setting the atmosphere and the tone, that's kind of, you know, I feel like where God has gifted me to sort of mm-hmm. Mitigate that awkwardness a little bit. And it was just my wife and I running this first event. And I'm so thankful that she was there because, you know, she could be a conversation partner to some of the ladies as they're checking in and,
yeah.
You know, but we send out an email saying like tips for the men, tips for the women. And there was a, you know, sign in process and mm-hmm. everybody got a name tag. And the first thing we did was I put everybody into small groups to begin with.
Yeah.
And we played a game where you had to find common ground with the people in your group. So I would, you know, on the microphone, I would say a prompt and say, okay, what's one state or city besides Washington or in the Pacific Northwest that you've all been to, and you have 1 minute to figure it out. Okay. And so it sort of breaks the ice in a low stakes setting where mm-hmm. everybody's in a group together and they can laugh and have fun. And so we did a few rounds of that, and it was really nice. And people got to know each other in a very low stakes, casual sort of way before we did more structured icebreakers, one-on-one, giving people a chance to actually meet each other. Right. And these were more intentional questions.
Right.
Maybe, like, for example, one was like, you know, as they were sitting with their conversation partner, I said, what type of family do you want to build?
That's interesting. Yeah.
And people got to answer that question. And, you know, some people were really confident and they just ended up having a full on conversation. They completely ignored my question, yeah. which is fine.
yeah. You know,
but give people something to fall back on in case it was a little awkward. But
yeah,
you know, that's a great question because it's like you're talking to somebody who's a serious Christian. Mm-hmm. Talk to a woman who wants to build a family. What kind of family do you want to build? Well, I see myself having one kid because, you know, I'm 37 years old and I'm getting started a little late. You know, somebody else is 22 and they want to build a legion of babies, right?
Right, right.
Like, maybe those two people shouldn't get married, right?
Right.
You figure that out. But, and then we had dinner. We served a delicious dinner.
Yeah.
My wife prepared, and it was great. The fellowship amongst the guys during dinner was awesome, and the ladies had good, you know, it was a fun evening. And mm-hmm. that's really what I wanted people to have as well, is like, in case you didn't meet a prospective spouse, you still had a really fun time.
Right. What's funny is you don't know this, but I've written premarital counseling, right? Materials. So we talk about 8 important things, your view of God, right? Like, do you have somewhat of a consistent, you know, is one Muslim, one Christian, you need to know yeah. that, right? You know, you need to have a biblical worldview or a similar worldview. And then number 2 is his family, her family, because when you understand the difference of background, so like I came from a divorced family, my wife did not, her family's, you know, they've been married 50, 60 years, whatever it is. And, you know, so we talked about his family because that all brings baggage in. And then your family future, which is like the idea of, I want to have 10 kids. I want to have 0 kids. I want to have 2 dogs, you know, and so they can talk through that as well. And then we talk about in the curriculum, debt and finance, which you're not going to do all this on the first date, but you know, it's a progression of conversations through the premarital counseling, and I actually set them up as dates because they take the little booklet, they go out and they have the conversation, and then they come back and we talk about it as a group. I'm really proud of you for picking that up. Like, what type of family do you want? It's a big, big issue. If, you know, if one wants to be a stay-at-home mom and take care of their kids, which is incredibly important and valued and, you know, and that kind of thing. And the other one wants to be, you know, the mom that goes out and works in corporate America and doesn't have kids. And so there's an alignment, and both can glorify God. It's just, you got to be in alignment as you get into marriage.
Yeah. And that's really what we're trying to do. I've grown the team of hosts by, you know, 2 more couples that are going to come together and sort of help me with this. And so I should actually give people some details. So there's in coming up in October 11th, there's a singles mixer, a Christian singles mixer that we're hosting. And maybe we can put a link in the description or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's October 11th and it's for ages 21 to 40. And we explain why we picked the age cutoffs that we did. But then in 2 weeks after that, we're going to do another one because there was actually a really high demand for it. But for some of the older folks, 35 to 55. And so we're doing 2 events. One is on the 11th, 21 to 40. And the other one is October 25th, 35 to 55.
Okay, let me type that in. We'll put that up in the recording as well. October 25th?
Yes.
And then what's the age on that one?
35 to 55.
35 to 55. All right. That is great. And so those are the 2 dates. Let me show those again. And so we have the October 11th, 21 to 40, and October 25th, 35 to 35. And how do they get a hold of you, or how, what's that process?
Yeah. So we have a website. It's kind of complicated, but it's, you know, they can just send me an email directly. If they want more information, I can send you the registration link and where there's a description of the event. It's called He Who Finds. That's what we're calling the event, He Who Finds. Mm-hmm. And, but the website's a little complicated because it's one of those like RSVP ones. And so it's like hewhofinds.rsvpify.com.
Okay. We'll put it in the description below.
Yeah, put it in the show notes. But my email is mastrotgr@gmail.com.
All right. mastrotgr@gmail.com. Yeah, I'll put it in the notes too.
Cool.
Yeah.
But it's here in Spokane Valley, and we have people from out of town come. So if you live in Western Washington, we had a gentleman come from Western Washington, and you know, he had a great time, and I think he actually paired with somebody. It'd be interesting to check up and see how that's going. But so if you live in Moses Lake, Wenatchee, Post Falls, right, like, you're more than welcome to come to this event. You know, we just, the times call for it, right? Like, we need more people to get married and start having children, primarily to glorify the Lord, because the marriage covenant is, you know, the one of the greatest pictures of Christ's covenantal love for his church. It's one of the greatest depictions, and I would say the greatest earthly depiction we have of that.
Right.
And so it glorifies God. But one of the byproducts of that is godly families.
It is.
Children coming up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And what does that do for a community? It makes it safer, makes it godlier, it makes it more righteous. Mm-hmm. In a time where just you look around and it feels like there's a lot of darkness.
Right.
You see, you look around and you're like, are there any, like, where are all the righteous people? Right. You know, they're there.
Right.
But it's not, we want to be flooded with it. Yeah. We want to live in it. We want to bask in it. And one way to do that is through building godly families.
So let's talk about that for a moment. I was recently in a interview with the New York Times, and we started talking about abortion, and we started talking about these issues of the killing of the family. That wasn't obviously how they stated it, but I talked about the birth rate. And one of the things to note is why this is important, both from a social structure, also to a religious structure, also to an economic structure. There's a whole bunch that plays into having children. And then the spiritual structure as well. And so, you know, when the birth rate of any population group gets to about 1.2, right? It's on that fault line. In other words, if it goes below that for too long, like to 0.6 or 0.7, other words, you know, it's meaning that you're not reproducing enough to rebuild your culture, society, and the social structure is going to fall apart. If the birth rate is above 1.2, which is that is the absolute minimum, right? So like Japan recently hit that 1.2 mark, and they're like, we got to give people an extra day off. We've got to get them to have more kids, because they know that it's going to become a problem economically, that it's, you know, they're not going to have enough of the workforce to take care of the elderly. And this is why God clearly said that we are to cultivate and keep the land, that we are to populate the land. And this is where that overpopulation myth is just, you know, just a lie. You know, large families are very, very important to, you know, to moving into a society and culture, because we got to overcome the death rate, right? You know, so that we have society and culture. And I think the foundation of this is the concept of that God wouldn't say populate and fill the earth if that was going to cause chaos. We don't serve a chaotic God. He did that for a reason. And I'm just proud of you that you're just thinking, how do we you know, encourage people to get married first and have children second, you know, and to raise them in the ways of the Lord. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons why I think we're seeing that is because our culture and just society and just the forces that be have encouraged people to enter a certain track, right? Like they say, you need to graduate high school. you need to go to college. You need to go for 4 years. You need to get some work experience for 2 years. And then maybe then you can start thinking about having a family and getting married. Well, if all that plays out the way, you know, you're already 26 or 27 years old by that point.
Right.
And sometimes it can take a year or two if you're intentionally looking to meet somebody. So, you know, let's just say by the time you meet somebody, you're 28. Mm. And then you have your first child by 29. It's common sense that you don't have as much time to build a family.
That's right.
You know, you think you have all this time, and most people, like, who are Christians and they get started late. Like, I've talked to many, many couples who they're like, man, I really wish we would have got started a little earlier.
Right.
And I think we need to just dispel the myth that you won't be happy getting married young. That, like, we tell our young people, you need to go out and experience the world. You need to, you know, find out what you really want to do, like, and experience. And what they really mean by that is, like, hook up with as many people as you can and enjoy yourself while you're young, and then think about doing something and getting married and doing that later. Like, and it's just a lie. Like,
an absolute lie. Yeah.
It does not lead to true happiness. You know, so if you're 18, 19 years old and you're a Christian, think about getting married at age 20. Like, really, yeah. Like, just seriously do it. Like, grow up. Like, we have too many young 23 or 24 year old boys in this country who are not mature, and be a part of what actually changes our country and our communities. Is, like, we need to grow up. We have so many 20, 21 year old young men who just need to grow up. And one of the ways they can grow up is by growing as a Christian, involving themselves in their church, hanging around godly older men.
Yeah.
And actually growing in sanctification and growing in godliness. But then think about how you can start growing a family in your early 20s.
Yeah.
Like that's a W right there.
That is. That's exciting. You know, one of the things that we did with our, I have three boys and one girl, with our boys, is we at age 13 pronounce them men. That's a that's a Jewish tradition. And so we give them, at 18, they get a ring, and a family ring. And we say, hey, you are a man. In other words, you're able to reproduce and you're able to move forward. Now let's take from 13. And the reason why I'm setting this age is I think that we've pushed this back where we think at age 20, I'm going to begin to think about marriage, like you just said, and then it ends up being about 30 before they do it. I think once you've hit puberty and the ability to reproduce, from 13 to 18 to 19, that is your training time. It's not when you're 23 and then you're up in the 30s. Your training time about what it means to be a young man is in those age. Think about this. The life expectancy used to only be 55, right? Or 60, right? Oftentimes they didn't live, very long. Now, in the Old Testament, I know there are some people who lived hundreds of years. I get that. That was a little bit different system, you might say. But we need to look forward and start understanding for our young men and our young women that God is in development much earlier, and that there's not this rebellious middle age group that was never in Scripture, right? The teenage years, that was never in Scripture. That whole concept of, well, I'm 13, I get to be rebellious until I'm, you know, 25 and I come to my senses. If you want a lot of regrets, then take on the world system. But if you want a life of peace and joy in the Lord, do it God's way. Start maturing much earlier at 13, 14. Learn how to work. Learn how to get out there and provide for a family. I think that's a great encouragement and a great win, like you just said.
Yeah, and people 100 years ago got married much, much younger. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because people were just a little bit more mature, and people started working earlier, you know.
Yep.
I'm not advocating for children working in factories or anything like that, but, like, you know, it's kids working on a farm, you know, bucking hay bales and, like, just putting in an honest day's work at, you know, age 15, 16. And there's areas of your life that sort of just naturally fall into order when you are working and cultivating, and it's incredibly fulfilling. And it's because that's the way God made us. And, you know, you start maturing through gainful employment, meaningful employment, and, you know, you want to put that to good use. And like God told us to take dominion and to be fruitful and multiply. And you really, like, if you just for 5 years from 20 to 25 are just serving yourself and living for yourself, that's five valuable years where, you know, you could have been really building something great. And I heard one pastor say, I can't remember his name, but he talked about how he got married at 18. His wife was 18 and they were both the same age. And he talks about how, why it was a wonderful thing. And he said, you know, there was certainly less baggage, right? Like you both people are not coming into the relationship with eight ex-girlfriends or boyfriends and, you know, all these memories and a bunch of baggage that just comes with that. But like he likened it to cement, right? Like being poured and just being able to like to dry together.
Right.
And man, the way he described it is like, man, that sounds wonderful to spend these really great years where you're young and you have, you're youthful and you have vigor and energy and to, you know, you're not perfect, right? You're not going to have the theology and eschatological views and the
right,
like of a father, right? Like who's in their 50s, but are you on a good trajectory, right? And like to be able to like mature alongside your spouse, like cement to dry together, it would just unite you even more. And that to me seems like something much greater to pursue than this lie of like hookup culture and hooking up with as many girls as you can before you're 25 and then finally settling down. Like,
well, first off, let's be clear about this. Fornication, which is what we're talking about in essence, is contrary to the word of God, and it said that it says that fornicators will end up in hell. So if a Christian, I want to be very clear about this, a Christian will not fornicate. In other words, what I mean by this is, if you truly have a love for God, you're going to keep your eyes, your ears, your heart in purity, right? And yes, I know it's by grace through faith that we're saved, period, nothing else. But if all of the byproduct of our life is worldliness, I want to ask you, where did that seed fall, right? So Jesus talked about four types of soil. He talks about the soil that fell on the rocky soil, the, you know, unplowed soil, the thorny soil, you know, and I want to say, did the seed actually fall in good soil? And is there actually, are you really grafted in, you know?
Yeah.
Because fornication is not going to get you anywhere. And I think sometimes there's this idea like, well, if I have, you know, sex with multiple people, I'm going to be better at having sex. It's actually a lie, right? When I sit down with couples, I talk to them about sexual. I say, how long do you think it's going to be until you have great sex with your spouse? And they're like, oh, what's this about? Because it's in the intimacy one that we do. I said, did you know that you won't have great sex until about 5-6 years? Because you're going to learn it's not about you, it's about serving. So, you know, when we first enter into relationship with a person, with a spouse, or with, you know, it's more about me. What do I get out of this? How do I feel about this? But when we start learning the humility of serving our spouse, the humility of loving our spouse, the humility of laying down ourselves for the other person, then that is when we, through the gospel message is what it is, the dying to self, that we begin to have great sex. And that doesn't happen in a hookup, and that doesn't happen in a one night stand or even multiple or living together. People are like, I'm going to test flight marriage. No, it doesn't happen. It's a false reality. You're playing house, and you need to knock it off. And turn to the living God. I know I'm probably being a little bit more blunt than I should, but it's incredibly important that we as Christians model true family.
Yeah. And yeah, you're really speaking to two crowds. Like, I mean, obviously, hopefully the people who are Christians know this already.
Right, exactly.
And for those who, you know, they're searching for meaning, right? It seems like there's a search for meaning right now that's stronger than it ever has been. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people at least in the last few days since Charlie Kirk passed away, I know a lot of young people who respected him, who aren't Christians, right? You know, but maybe they're in high school and they liked his conservatism, and they liked his politics, and they liked his boldness. Mm-hmm. And they're stunned, and they're searching for meaning, and like, so there's another event that just adds to this wave, you know, this post-COVID era of people just wondering what the heck is going on. And it's kind of abstract, it's kind of hard to define, but you can feel it out there. Mm-hmm. Right? And so if for those people who are searching for meaning, give your life to the Lord.
That's right.
And that's step number one. If everything we're saying makes no sense to you, it's because you need to come to the light first.
Exactly. So we're going to take about a minute and a half break here for just a moment, mostly because I'm over 50 and I've got to use the restroom really quick, but we're going to have a commercial break, and then I will come back and we're going to talk about, continue this conversation on marriage. And I want to hear more about how you and your wife came together and that kind of thing. So we'll be right back after this 1 minute break.
You love our beautiful state, but does fighting for issues that most affect families ever feel like you're climbing alone? It can feel like an uphill climb in a hostile environment that champions causes detrimental to Washington families. Again and again, the summit feels out of reach, but you don't have to climb alone. With like-minded people fighting for Washington families by your side, the journey becomes not just possible, but powerful. The Defender app, brought to you by the Family Policy Institute of Washington, connects you with your team for the climb ahead. Connect with conservatives who care about issues affecting families in your specific county and across our state in order to make our voices be heard locally and in Olympia. Simply click Learn to stay informed about the latest news affecting families. With one click, press Huddle to team up with other conservative minds in your specific county who care about how these issues affect you in your unique community. Then simply press Activate to get involved and to make your voice heard on legislation that matters in Olympia. With the Washington Defender app, you won't face the fight alone. Together, we can make a difference for families in Washington. Download the Washington Defender app today, a simple way to let your voice be heard.
Well, if you're just joining us today, I'm so excited to have our special guest today, Mr. Matthew from The Great Reassessment. He's the host of that show. And we've been talking about the value of marriage and some of the events that he has going on to bring couples together so that they can have a God-honoring relationship and have God-honoring marriage and produce godly children. And so if you haven't checked out these dates, I want to encourage you, October 11th, we're going to have more information in the details below. They're facilitating an event for those who are 21 to 40, kind of a meet and greet kind of a event, and it's a great time. And then on October 25th, from 35 to 55, if that's your age, we'll have more information in the notes below. But this is just a great idea, Matthew. I'm so excited because, you know, we're the Family Policy Institute, and we want marriages to happen. We want families to take place. And I do want to say this because I think sometimes people forget. There's a number of areas that we have as a family. So in one sense, we're fellow human beings, and so we're part of the family of creation. And then in one sense, we live in the United States, we're part of our citizenships in the United States. We're kind of like a big family as a country. And then the state of Washington, and then, you know, our church family. So I want to be careful because I know that there's some who can't have kids or can't do those kind of things. We understand that those things take place. We're not devaluing that as well. I mean, we're in no way. At the same time, we do know that for those who are able to come together in a biblical marriage and an honoring marriage and then have kids, that is actually God's normal plan in moving forward. And I'm just excited. So just in a recap way, before we get into how you met your wife, anything you'd like to say on these two events as we go in this last half?
Yeah, obviously we're pursuing what Scripture says, and we're laying forth a creative way in order to bring people together who otherwise might not have met. And because it can be so difficult to meet a godly spouse today, especially if you go to, maybe you're a part of a really small church, right? And there's only like 25 people there, and you live in a small town, and you don't really have an opportunity to meet somebody who's godly. And like, you know, you're certainly not going to meet your godly Christian spouse. I mean, at least odds are that you're not going to meet them at a bar on a Friday night, right? Like, right. It's going to take something intentional, and right. we need to get creative. And so we're trying to facilitate that. And we're trying to do it in a way that is safe, right? Like, for women, and not a waste of people's time.
So this isn't like they're coming to some party that everyone's getting drunk. And, you know, this is a very God honoring meet and greet. Now, I will tell you, on my first date with my wife, we sat down at a coffee shop. We actually tried to get some other people to go with us. No one would. And so we sat down at this coffee shop, and this is when coffee shops were first coming out. And I said, hey, I just want to be clear. I'm looking for a spouse. So if you're just in the dating thing, I'm just say it now. I'm not into that. Like, I'm going to be evaluating. I hope you'll evaluate if this is a good fit. And, you know, and she just kind of laughed because my wife is more laid back than I am. And, but you know, she said she's looking for a relationship too. And I think this is kind of gets you over that hurdle a little bit. Cause it sounds like you're having people who are serious about wanting a good godly relationship.
Yeah, we are. These are people who, you know, maybe they're 25, 26 years old, and they know that, you know, they're still young, but you know, maybe 3 or 4 more years, it's like, we want to get a move on this, right? And we don't have time to date somebody for 3 years to get to know them.
Right.
And that's just, right? Like, it doesn't take that long to get to know somebody if that person is a good fit to be a spouse.
Right.
You know, like you mentioned earlier, oh, we need to live together first and see how we are. It's like, no, that's actually a lie. And a mm-hmm. lot of those marriages end up resulting in divorce.
80%. Yep. It has a higher divorce rate than the blind dates. And then the reason is because when you're in this false reality of playing house, I call it playing house. You're still on your best behavior to a certain degree, right? You're still trying to persuade. Well, then they get married and all that changes. And then one spouse or the other feels like they were lied to. And so the resentment comes up because they know that they did it this way before marriage. And now they're doing it that way after marriage. And so it's just, I mean, I've counseled, I don't know, I never counted, but many people who chose that path. A, it doesn't honor God. B, it sets a false reality that you can't have.
Yeah.
How did you and your spouse meet?
Yeah, well, that's a fun question to answer. And so in 2017, I enlisted in the United States Air Force, and that ended up taking me out of Spokane, and I was stationed at Joint Base Andrews, which is in the state of Maryland, which is really close to Washington, D.C. It's only about 10 minutes away.
Okay.
And so that was really cool. I was pretty much in D.C. almost like 4 days a week, just doing different things and, you know, so many fun events taking place in our nation's capital. And that's actually where I was going to church, too, was within the city. Wow. And yeah, I mean, it's hard to meet somebody there. Like it right. really, there's, I think within a mile of the Beltway, there's like 6 million people that live there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're a conservative, you know how just DC can be a very liberal, secular place. And so, right. and everybody's very career driven. So even if you do meet a Christian woman, mm-hmm. chances are she's very career driven. She's not even focused on marriage. Like I got this timeline for the next 5 years. I'm working for the Bureau and I'm not even focusing on it. And so if you really want to get married and build a family, like that's it can be a very challenging place to meet. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it can be very right. challenging. And I was going to a little church at the time and, you know, I had already met most of the women there, but I was going there faithfully just because that's where the Lord had me. And I was being discipled really well by some really strong men. And my wife just appeared one day. She was visiting. She was doing an internship with National Right to Life.
Okay.
And so she was there for the summer, and it was a small enough church to where when somebody new came, you,
yeah.
20 something year old girl is like, okay. But, and so I really wanted to go approach her, but I also didn't want to seem corny or like that guy. And so I waited one more week to see if she would return.
Wait, I want to point something out here really quick. I waited one more week. He didn't wait 20 years. He didn't wait 15 years. He waited a week. Okay, keep going.
Yeah. And she came back the following Sunday. And yeah, it was just really funny the way we met. Like, I had played in a soccer game the day before. Right. And I actually tore a tendon in my upper thigh. Like,
oh, wow.
It was the most excruciating pain I've ever felt. So I was limping and I was just hobbling around the church.
Yeah.
And I had these brochures that I was passing out to people, pamphlets, and I just like dropped them in front of her, like totally by accident. And some of my friends knew I was in pain, so I couldn't literally bend over. And so she thought I was a jerk for like dropping all these papers and not leaning over to like pick them up, but making
it. Yeah.
And then there was another guy at my church, a married man, one of the elders, younger guy. And we were both in the military. We both had brown hair, military haircuts, a tattoo on our inner arm.
Right.
And we both like religiously wore black t-shirts at the time.
Right.
And so she mistaked me for him when I was talking to her. And she goes, isn't this guy married? Like, why is he talking to me like this? And so there was just a confusion, but like we ended up hitting it off and we got married like 8 months later.
So let's talk about that. So how did you go? I mean, like you hit it off, but did you ask her on a date? Did you go out to coffee? Was it just low key or did what happened there? I mean, you don't.
Yeah. Well, we had a common interest in studying languages.
Yeah.
So, you know, she had studied Russian in college and, you know, I have a background in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just found common ground on that. And obviously we both found each other physically attractive. Like that's a good start. Right.
Right.
And I used to go to these events called language exchanges. I was trying to learn Portuguese at the time.
Okay.
And so I would go to these events where people who are trying to learn new languages would go and you would put a name tag on in the language you're trying to acquire. And, you know, it was just a fun thing to do. And so we met there just as like a casual, like, we're going to just
do this together or whatever.
Do this together and just get to each other a little bit more. And then I think we went paddle boarding one time and it was very soon, like probably within a month where I was like, okay, I really do want to pursue this further. But right. We talked about our faith. Meeting at church was obviously great because, you know, a lot of the same friends that we made, you know, they were able to give us pastoral oversight and shepherd us well through our dating relationship. And she was meeting with the pastor's wives, getting discipled and reading the Bible. And I was meeting with the pastor and they were able to do like frequent check-ins with how we're doing and things we should be looking for.
Right.
And it was great. And so there was just some compatibility and we both, you know, knew that we wanted to get married. And so it was very soon, like we started dating very seriously. And I think it was like February I proposed. Fun. I had to fly her back to Washington to meet my family first. I wanted to at least check that box and we need to meet each other's families, which we did. And
Where was her family from, if you don't mind?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Okay.
So
yeah,
crazy how the Lord works because.
So let me get this right. A guy from Spokane is in the DC area. A lady from Massachusetts. Why can't I say that? Came to DC as well. You happened to meet in a church service and a very small church, it sounds like, or a smaller church. And that's how God brings people together at times.
Yeah. I mean, that was and all the little things that brought me to that point, right? Like joining the military, right? Like that was a necessary thing for me to end up in that place. And then there's all these little decisions made along the way that affect where I'm going to live, what church I'm going to go to. And you look back and you see God's divine providence in all of it, because some of those small decisions that you think are meaningless, God ended up using those to put you in a very important place at a very important time that changed and altered your entire life course forever.
Yeah. And we see the sovereignty of God and your free will exercised out, because you still had to, you had to take a step of faith and say, hey, do you want to go to this language thing? Do you want to? And this is where I think a lot of times we get confused. It's like, how does this work together? It's both and. You have to like say something to them. Like, it's not, you're not going to get married by osmosis. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go on a date by osmosis. You got to have the courage to do it. Now, when I say a date, I'm not talking about the world's view of a date. I'm talking about an appropriate dinner or appropriate event where you do something together. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about anything other than just that. So that's exciting. Now, how long have you guys been married?
So we just celebrated our 5-year anniversary.
Wow.
And yeah, it's fun. We got married in the heat of COVID.
Yeah.
And so it was April 2020. And we almost didn't get married because a lot of the courthouses in DC, I mean, all the courthouses in DC stopped issuing marriage licenses. Mm. Most of the courthouses in the greater DMV area stopped issuing marriage licenses. And so we found the last one, I think it was Fairfax County, issued us a marriage license. And I was so grateful to God, because it's like, it was just like, man, this is getting really tyrannical. Like, people can't get married.
Wow.
And so, yeah, with 5 years, and it's been great. We moved back to Spokane and we have 3 beautiful children.
That's awesome. Now, I know for Tanya and I, she doesn't like when I say this because she has a different perspective, but our first 7 years were hell on earth. And then we went to purgatory for 6 years and we've been best friends for 15. and the reason why I say it that way is because even though I was in ministry and all this kind of things, I hadn't humbled myself for my past. In other words, my parents' divorce, all that stuff was playing out in my heart. That's not blame shifting, but I just really had a lot of hard things that I was selfish about. And God was like, I'm going to get this out of you. And marriage does that. It's a great expression for the gospel to learn about dying to self and walking in newness of life. Now, I know not everyone has that. Like, some people have a very smooth first 4 or 5 years and then they have turbulence, but I can guarantee at some point you're going to have turbulence in the marriage, and it's God refining you. I mean, I didn't realize how selfish of a person I was until I got married, you know, and then when I got married, you add in all those things. And it's incredible how God refined you, and you understand more about God's character, about who he is in your life, his presence in your life. And I'm still not, you know, a perfect husband or father or anything like that, because I know that I'm a human being. I know I'm a saint in Jesus Christ, but I'm also a sinner saved by God's grace simultaneously. I'm both things simultaneously. I don't know. I just want to encourage people. They're sometimes waiting until they get over something or through something. Now, if you have a major addiction, I think that's something worth, you know, like if you have drug addiction or something like that, you need to work through that. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're not perfect human beings once we get, you know, just to get married. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, if anything, it reveals just how much more sanctification there is to go.
Yeah, exactly.
And God uses the marriage relationship to grow us. I've certainly seen a lot of growth. And I think for men especially, it's one of the great things is like you grow as a leader. And, you know, for a lot of young men, I think it gives them something to rise to the occasion to. And we need more of that. Obviously, it's a journey. So a lot of those sin issues and our own selfishness, if you're used to just living by yourself and never having to give up your own desires for the sake of anybody else, it's going to struggle a little bit. You know, there's ways to where I think you can prepare yourself, obviously.
Right.
Like, I think there's some people who they have upbringings, they have examples of godly marriages. They're just more mature and they're walking with the Lord very closely. And obviously you can really prepare yourself for marriage, so maybe some of those obstacles don't rock the boat as much.
Right.
However, if you're married, like there's going to come things and there's going to be obstacles but it binds you closer to your spouse when you do faithfully and through the Lord's guidance, you know, make it through those obstacles and those journeys together. And so, yeah.
What's interesting is that that process kind of restarts. Then you have kids, and then you learn another level of how selfish you are, right? Because, you know, there's no such thing as daddy time or mommy time or my time or this time. You know, we use that language, and it's really like, where is that in the Bible? It's not. You know, it's a sacrificial love. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't go out on a date or you can't. You know, I'm not saying that, but the idea of like, I got to get away for just me. I don't know that I've had that in 30 some years. And why I say that is, yes, I've had my date nights. You know, we ended up having a disabled child, and she's 24, 25 now, wheelchair bound. And so we've never gotten out of that infancy age. And it's like, I will have plenty of time to have my time in heaven, right? You know, because it's this reality that this marriage is one of the greatest maturing, sanctification working things that can happen in you. And it's exciting. And I think a lot of guys or men go into it thinking it's about the sex, it's about this, you know, this kind of thing, and honoring God with my purity and et cetera. It is. That is an element of it. But it's so much more than that. It's about God's refinement of the gospel inside of you, of dying to self and walking in newness. At least that's what I've been finding over these last 28 to 30 years.
Yeah. You learn to hold loosely to those things that maybe you like the me time, right?
Right.
And you know, if I want some quiet time, it just means I have to wake up earlier in the morning.
That's right. That's right. You
know, really, like, I try to wake up at like between 6 and 6:30, mm-hmm. because, you know, if I want to get some exercise in, if I want to get into the word and just have some quietness, you know, calm before the storm, so to speak. Like,
right.
But it's interesting that, like, in order for me to do that, I have to do something productive at the same time. It's like, and there's just like a refining process, like you said, like waking up early and you're awake when it's calm and quiet, and it gives you time to reflect before the day starts, and you have meaningful time in the word and time in prayer. It's like, right. All of those things are just like little building blocks, and it's just part of that journey. And like, but yeah, it teaches you to hold on loosely to all those things that you just think are there to serve you. And you begin to question, like, man, why am I feeling this tension? It's like, well, maybe it's because I a lot of this stuff was to serve me and my little desires and my little kingdom. And
a lot of it's idolatry, isn't it? I mean, it's really like where we, and if you're not familiar with idolatry, it's where we're willing to break relationship with someone else because we're not getting our way, right? So we're worshiping something and they don't worship it, so we break relationship. And a lot of it is idolatry. And I know in my heart, I can make idols so quickly, you know, whether it's, you know, of things. And I've dealt with anger in my marriage, you know, the disappointments that have come. And over the years, I hope my wife has seen and my kids have seen, you know, getting better at that, getting better at having self-control, at persevering when things are stressful. So in no way when we're saying, hey, have babies, have kids, hey, it'll be a bed of roses and everything's going to be great. No, it's the next refining process of God inside of you.
Exactly.
And it's beautiful. It is so beautiful to understand. The scriptures just come alive even more. So we're not saying you're not going to have tension or conflict or, you know, those kind of things. You're going to have those. Mm-hmm. But marriage is not about being happy. Marriage is about experiencing the joy of the Lord through your trials.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, it is very much about serving your spouse and your kids and learning that humility. And I got a long ways to go. I don't even know if I'm in junior high league yet, but I'm trying to get there.
But Brian, I'll just say, I mean, you and I have spoken a couple of times now, and I've gotten to know you a little bit over the last couple of years. And just hearing you speak, it's like you're a grandfather and you're a fairly young grandfather.
Right.
And like, that inspires me, and I think it should inspire others, but like, what a blessing it must be to be able to enjoy your grandkids and not be like bedridden and to deal with like all sorts of aches and pains and like just the the natural things that come with becoming, getting older. And I mean, that must be a real blessing to be able to experience that. Like you can wrestle with your grandkids. You can.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, and pick them up and put them on your shoulders without
having them around, do all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
The bitter cup of just, you know, in this life, like we grow older and like we're all going to die one day. Right. But like, as we get towards that end of life, our bodies, we become decrepit and our bodies fail us. But to be able to enjoy the fruits of being a grandfather and to be able to actually do life with them in a very tangible way like that,
yeah.
Like what a beautiful thing.
Well, and plus, so my son at the age of 14, because we really did pronounce manhood, right? About the age of 14, we didn't even bring up marriage, but he started saying, I want to get married and have kids. And so he started processing that, you know, at a very young age. At 18, he found his wife, and she's like, I'm not marrying a teen. So they waited till he was 20 and they got married. But this is what's really cool about doing this a little bit older, younger, is that there are events where five grandpas are there with my grandkids. So there's me, there's, you know, Rachel's dad, there's my dad, anyways, you get it. There's Tanya's dad and then another. And what a blessing. So they have the great grandkids there. You know, I was talking to Theo, my grandkid, and I'm like, hey, you have a lot of grandpas and grandmas, you know, because we can have all five of us, or well, yeah. It's five couples. And he's like, yeah, I know. You know, and so it's that is helping mature. Mm. And what is fun is like I see the great grandparents and how they're reacting, and that's helped me mature. And then my son, you know, he's picked up some of the negative temperaments of myself, and that's helping him mature. So there's a family ecosystem that takes place that's healthy when we have that time together and the ability just to be together versus in a time of crisis, like you're saying, with a health issue or something else. So I think it's beautiful. I want to encourage people to do that. So
what a sweet thing. And I think it seems like just like maybe there's like this Abraham moment to come. It's like, what a blessing for your father to just be surrounded by that and to come around a table and enjoy a meal together with that many members of that many generations. Like, things can truly get passed down.
Right.
And that's something I've been reflecting on lately, is like not abandoning tradition, right? Like, one of the things that I think today causes a lot of struggle for people is like, they're stuck in this continuous present moment. Mm. Right. Like, if, for people who don't have any children around, for people that don't have any grandparents around, like I'm thinking of somebody who, like, I was a former high school teacher, right? Mm-hmm. And so I look at these kids, right, and like what we're doing with them, you know, they're stuck with people their own age all day,
right?
And a lot of them are glued to their phones, and so they never really get out of this peer group, which is just really age restricted, right? And so they're sort of cut off from their past, right? And that's like one of the things that this leftist utopian vision has fed our children these days, is like, you can't be proud of your heritage. You can't be proud of your country. They've taught them to sort of abandon patriotism. Mm-hmm. And then all the meanwhile is like, they're not engaging with children, those who are going to come up after them.
Right.
And so they've sort of abandoned memory. They've abandoned the future, and they're just stuck in this continuous presence. And what are the consequences of that? I don't know. I can't really explain it all the way, but that's.
Well, we can tell you the byproducts is depression. It's anger. It's violence. I mean, we're seeing it all around us, because what you're saying, you landed on something very important, is when you make the island so small, it gives you no context to life, right? So we strip away. Now, I want to be careful here. Our identity is in Christ and Christ alone, period. The reality is we have sub-identities. You know, I'm a U.S. citizen. I have, you know, all these other things. They're not things that we worship, you might say, but they're still part of the context of our life. So if you remove all of that context of your life down to one sentence, and this is kind of what you're saying, or to one island or to one little spot, it's like, what good is it? I mean, I have no reference points. But when I understand I'm part of a grander story of, you know, I'm part of the noble family. And then because my parents were divorced, I'm part of the Wasilius family. And, you know, so I have both Dutch roots, you might say, even though I wasn't, you know, blood that way. And I have the Oklahoma roots, you know, and it gives you that context that's there. And that brings hope, and that brings that excitement and interest, and it allows us to go beyond this one sentence, you know, world, or this one little island world. And it makes it the ability for me to see that there are brighter days yet ahead, because then I start creating that for other people. And I think you're onto something. It's important to note is that the society and culture isn't getting healthier. We're becoming more mentally unhealthy with whatever we're doing. So it's not working. So let's go back to the things that did work.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the things that confer identity in somebody, people have just been cut off from those. So the family, right? Before, I mean, like you said, first and foremost, we ought to find our identity in Christ.
Right.
But there's like these concentric circles, right? Like Christ being the big one, right? But then there's these other ones, like God wants people to be a part of a family. Mm-hmm. If God didn't want nations to exist, he wouldn't have made the world to be a country of nations, or I mean, a world of nations.
Yeah.
Like there's a reason France and Russia and Australia, there's a reason all these exist. It's because God created a world of nations.
And if you need the scriptural reference, it's the Sermon on Mars Hill where Paul said, and God set up nations and appointed their times, their seasons, and their boundaries. So exactly right. God made it.
Yeah. And God made different people groups.
He made
people with different cultures.
He did.
And we can attach ourselves to this. But like as you chip away at all these things and just you serve people on a plate, this vague notion of equity and diversity, and that's all you're giving them. That's the only thing somebody can confer identity. And it's like you become deracinated on all fronts. Mm-hmm. And when you're deracinated, you don't have any stable roots. You can have these heavy swings, right? Like, and who knows where those people are going to land.
Yeah.
Like Gen Z is a group that I look at that is heavily deracinated.
Explain that word for people if it's a new word for people.
So deracinated comes from, so the word, the root word there, ras, comes from the Latin word for root. Mm. So when you're deracinated, it's like you're uprooted.
I see.
Yeah. And you have no, nothing to ground you to any of those things that confer identity in a person.
Mm-hmm.
Our culture has been attacking a lot of those historic areas, country, family, faith. Like there's been an all-out war on those areas.
Mm.
And like I was saying before, you know, people are cut off from their past, they're cut off from the future, and they're living in this continuous presence. All the while, they're deracinated, they're uprooted from those traditional areas. And so what you have is a group of people, especially young people now, because they're the most recent people who have come up in this world. At least if you're in your 70s and 80s, you have some vestige of a past to hold on to, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're born in 2004, right? Like this culture war has been on for a really long time.
Right.
And so you're like the guinea pig, right? Like what's going to happen to them? And you're seeing these heavy swings of kids who, they go from, I love Andrew Tate, he's awesome, to I think I'm gay in like 2 weeks.
Right.
Right. Like they have nothing to base themselves in. And so that's why this project of rebuilding culture and giving them good things, right? Giving them the gospel first, but giving them a nation, giving them a state, giving them a family, giving them a people, a true people, right? And that's the project of the next 50 years, I think.
It's exactly true. And this is where I want to be clear about the family unit. We all have in our families good seasons, bad seasons, embarrassing seasons. I mean, all the things in between. There's not one family that is perfect, right? So that happens. But those moments actually teach us the most about God, teach us about forgiveness and repentance, and teach us about those things. And so what people are saying now is like, cut out all the roots, deracinate, that's a new word for me, cut out all the roots and you know, try to build a tree. You cannot have a tree without roots. They got to go deep. And if you want to have a solid tree that doesn't blow over in every wind and every storm that comes your way, the roots have got to go deep. And what causes those roots to go deep is the search for water. And that search for water causes them to go down, wrap around rocks, wrap around all these things, these solid points, so that that tree stands firm. Mm. And so those times of refreshing come with self-reflection, with those times of like, hey, how can I make my family a little bit better? You know, what are some of the temperament or personalities that maybe need to be improved? But what are the foundations in our family? I can tell you, having one of the reasons why we do a ring and we do those kind of things is because we want you to think about the family unit in such a way that you're like, I want to honor the family, right? And I want to move the family forward, not in a prideful way, not in an arrogant way, but in an honoring way. And so that's what we need to do as a society and culture. And by the way, I hope every people group does that. Like, I don't think it should just be the United States. I think it should be Venezuela. It should be, you know, all Texas. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding. But it should be every area that, you know, of people that say, I want our roots to go deep, and that we need to be in a healthy way proud of those roots and proud and honored that God would entrust that to us. Maybe that's a better use of words, but I think you're onto something there as we go. Any closing remarks for people? We're going to have some comments in the section below, but any closing remarks, and then we'll sign off here.
Yeah. Well, I just want to thank you, Pastor Brian, for having me on. And I know you are doing the Lord's work just in all the areas that you're involved in. You got your fingerprints on a lot of different things. And so thank you for bold work that you do. And, you know, if people, I hope people are encouraged by our conversation, and that maybe it helps them flesh out a little bit of some of the things that they're seeing across the culture. But yeah, I'm going to continue to try to keep speaking on these issues. People can follow the podcast, The Great Reassessment. And, you know, if you're a Christian single out there in the Pacific Northwest, please reach out to me. And if you want to come to this event on October 11th, or October 25th, please reach out. And, you know, I think people, I'm losing my train of thought here, but
that's okay.
Yeah, just be encouraged and be bold. And this is not the time to just give up, right? If you've given up on finding a godly spouse and you think that you're just meant to be alone, you know, the Lord has gifted some people with singleness, but if you have the desire to get married, that's probably a really good sign that you're not meant to be single. So don't lie to yourself and say that you're just, you know, there's God has somebody out there for you, and it's time to build.
That's right. That's right. I think that's a good word. I think let's take the courageous step of loving someone else, allowing them to love us. I think we've, to a certain degree, overanalyzed marriage. You know, there used to be arranged marriages, and people made it work, right? And which actually reduced probably a lot of stress for people at times. And then there's been, you know, the idea of family marriages where people kind of married because of family, and then there was a lot of things in church. And then as all those units have been falling apart, we see now that we're in this isolation period, and we need to break it down and restore family to our communities once again. And Matthew, thank you so much for bringing people together and seeing if they can't find their future spouse. I think that's a healthy and godly thing to do. So like we like to say around here, we want to encourage you to defend and advance biblical values in the public square. This is our grassroots podcast. And if you'd like to be on and just talk about things of the day, we would love to have you as well. Matthew, I want to give you a blessing today, and thank you for giving us your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here. God bless.
All right.
Mm-hmm.